into beauty and skincare products. It is going to be a huge family affair. I'm curious as to what his first product will be. I'm Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn and Alice Bryant. Later, we will present the next part in our series on America's national parks. But first, North Korea destroyed the Inter-Korean Liaison Office building just north of the border with South Korea on Tuesday. Some considered the act a show of anger that calls for answers from the United States and South Korea. It comes as nuclear talks between the North and the U.S. have mostly stopped. The building was empty, and the North had made clear plans to destroy it. The move, however, is still provocative. It is also a serious problem for efforts by South Korean President Moon Jae-in to negotiate with the North. North Korea's official Korean Central News Agency said the country destroyed the office because its enraged people want to force the human scum to pay dearly for their crimes. South Korean experts believe the statement is talking about North Korean defectors who are active in anti-North Korea propaganda. The news agency did not give details about how the office in the North Korean border town of Gaesong was destroyed. South Korea's government later released military video showing clouds of rising smoke. The liaison office was located at a now-closed industrial area near the border between the two Koreas. South Korea issued a statement expressing strong regret over the destruction of the building. It also warned of a strong reaction if North Korea continues to hurt relations. The statement was released following an emergency National Security Council meeting. It said the destruction was an act that betrays hopes for an improvement in South-North Korean relations and the establishment of peace on the Korean Peninsula. The North said last week that it was cutting off all government and military communication with the South. It also threatened to end peace agreements it had reached under North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's three meetings with Moon in 2018. Some outside experts believe the North's economy is getting worse because of U.S.-led restrictions and the effects of the coronavirus. As a result, it is using provocative actions to push for an easing of the sanctions. South Korea's answer to Tuesday's destruction was strong compared to past provocations. The liaison office has been unoccupied since late January because of the coronavirus. The office was opened in September 2018 to aid communication between North Korea and South Korea. It was considered an important part of Moon's policy of reconciliation. On Saturday night, the sister of the North Korean leader warned that Seoul would see the liaison office being completely collapsed. Kim Yo-jong also said she would leave North Korea's military to take the next step. On Monday, Moon urged North Korea to stop creating problems and return to talks. He said the two Koreas must not cancel the 2018 inter-Korean summit deals. Leif Erik Easley is a professor at Ewha University in Seoul. He said it is hard to see how the act of destruction will help the Kim regime get what it wants from the world, but clearly such images will be used for propaganda. Inter-Korean relations have been strained since the breakdown of a second summit between Kim and Trump in Vietnam in early 2019. Disputes over what restrictions would be lifted in return for North Korea closing its main nuclear complex caused the talks to fail.
As the coronavirus outbreak continues, many Americans are fearful of using public transportation. They also are looking for ways to get exercise without having to go to a gym, as well as ways to enjoy the outdoors. So it may not be surprising that the pandemic has led to a major increase in bicycle sales. In the United States, bicycles at big stores like Walmart have sold out, and small bicycle stores cannot keep up with demand for family-style bicycles, the low-cost, easy-to-ride models. The bicycle industry is seeing its biggest sales increase since the oil crisis of the 1970s, said Jay Townley, an industry expert. The rise in bicycle sales is not happening just in the United States. Cities like Manila in the Philippines and Rome, Italy, have created bicycle paths for the growing number of people who want to avoid public transportation. In London, city officials plan to bar cars from some central roads. Bike shop owners in Manila say demand is even stronger than what they see at Christmas time. In Italy, the government's economic support plan included a 500 euro payment to help with the cost of a bicycle. Of course, you can only buy a bicycle if you can find a bicycle. In the U.S., the shortages now mean it may take many months to get one. High demand is not the only reason for the shortage. The U.S. buys 90% of its bicycles from China. Bicycle factories there were shut down to stop the spread of COVID-19. I'm Susan Shand.
Researchers are launching a study to see whether blood plasma from coronavirus survivors can block infection in others. The study will involve people in groups at high risk of getting infected. This could include health workers, husbands or wives of sick individuals, and people who live in nursing homes. The new research will build on recent studies that looked into whether blood plasma from recovered coronavirus patients could be an effective treatment for infected individuals. Plasma is the yellowish liquid part of blood. It contains proteins called antibodies that target infections entering the body. Blood plasma from former patients may help infected individuals defeat COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. Many survivors of COVID-19 have donated their blood plasma in hopes of helping sick patients recover. Thousands of coronavirus patients in hospitals around the world have been treated with this kind of plasma, including more than 20,000 in the United States. So far, there is little evidence to demonstrate that blood plasma is helping coronavirus patients recover. One recent study from China had unclear results. Another from New York showed only small benefits. Dr. Shmuel Shom of America's Johns Hopkins University told the Associated Press that the studies do provide some glimmers of hope. Shom will lead the new study on whether the plasma can prevent infections entirely. Researchers plan to use 150 volunteers for the study. Some of the test subjects will receive plasma from COVID-19 survivors that contains coronavirus-fighting antibodies. Others will receive a kind of plasma used daily in hospitals. Scientists will examine whether there are differences in who gets sick. If the survivor plasma works, it could play a major part in reducing the number of coronavirus infections until a vaccine is approved. The researchers say the survivor plasma could be given to high-risk individuals to temporarily strengthen the immune system. They're a paramedic, they're a police officer, they're a poultry industry worker, they're a submarine naval officer, Shom said. Can we blanket protect them? As more people survive COVID-19, there are increasing calls for them to donate plasma to build up the nation's supply, in case the treatments prove to be effective. Donated blood plasma is also sometimes combined with products designed to make the plasma stronger. The Spanish chemical company, Grifols, is expected to create a version of donor plasma that is filled with a large amount of antibodies. Using blood plasma directly from recovered patients seems to be safe, Dr. Michael Joyner of the Mayo Clinic reported last month. His team followed the first 5,000 people to receive plasma in a program run by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. The program, which helps hospitals carry out the experimental treatment, found few serious side effects in patients. I'm Brian Lynn.
One day in late May, high school teacher Jessica Macias put away worries about her future and began giving a class by video feed. She was teaching for Castle Park High School in San Diego, California. Macias, who is 26 years old, had attended Castle Park herself as a student. While giving the class, she tried to forget that she would soon be without a job. When the school year ended on June 5th, Macias and 204 other teachers in the Sweetwater Union High School District lost their jobs. The night before the class, she said in an interview, "I couldn't sleep because I was thinking about not having a job. Macias joined a large number of public school employees across the United States who have lost jobs because of school closures resulting from the coronavirus crisis. A Labor Department economist told Reuters that nearly 470,000 public school employees lost their jobs nationally in April alone. That is more than the nearly 300,000 total during the 2008 Great Recession. Based on information from a 2014 Russell Sage Foundation paper, the job losses at public K through 12 schools are bigger and coming faster than experts predicted. Michael Griffith is a researcher at the Learning Policy Institute. He said, "We're looking at record cuts in teaching positions. School officials, public officials, and teaching experts have warned the job losses will hurt the education of a generation of American students. It also could slow down the U.S. economic recovery, since public schools are big employers in the country." Research organization the Brookings Institution said the layoffs came at the worst possible time for high poverty schools. It published a paper in April saying more students will fall into poverty and need more from schools as their parents and guardians lose their own jobs. Public schools in poor areas are especially troubled because of the COVID-19 recession. Since property taxes are lower in poor areas, the schools depend more on state aid for money. With falling revenue and less sales taxes, state aid to public schools is decreasing in many places. A bill passed recently by the U.S. House of Representatives would provide $13.5 billion in aid to K-12 public schools. The House is controlled by the Democratic Party. Republicans who control the Senate oppose the bill as written. Many teachers and school officials worry that class sizes will double with fewer teachers. But Robert Hall, chief executive of the National Association of State Boards of Education, disagrees. He told Reuters that because of COVID-19 and the need for social distancing, class sizes will actually get smaller when schools reopen. Different students, he said, could come to school on different days and possibly receive video lessons other days. April was an especially unkind month to education. The U.S. Labor Department report said that in addition to the layoffs of public school employees, state-operated universities cut jobs for 176,000 professors and others. And private schools, including well-known universities and K-12 private schools, were down by nearly 460,000 employees. Susanna Loeb is a professor of education at Brown University, a private university in Rhode Island. She said she believes most of the job losses in April were non-teaching positions, as schools tend to lay off teachers last. Like schools across the U.S., San Diego's Sweetwater already had severe financial problems before COVID-19 hit. Sweetwater official Karen Janney did not respond to attempts to reach her for comment. English teacher Macias is out of luck. Because she had been a teacher at Castle Park for only 4 years, she was among the ones losing jobs. "One of my biggest dreams was to teach at Castle Park," Macias said. I'm Alice Bryant.
The state of Utah is home to 5 major national parks. They are among the most famous parks in the United States. Our national parks journey brings us to the southeastern part of the state. Here you will find narrow canyons, steep cliffs, and hidden river valleys. Welcome to Zion National Park.
Zion sits within a desert landscape. The 260-kilometer-long Virgin River runs through it. It provides water for more than 1,000 kinds of plants to grow and over 100 kinds of animals to live, including the desert tortoise, desert bighorn sheep, and mountain lions. River water has also carved out the area's spectacular canyons and gorges. One of them, called Zion Canyon, stretches more than 20 kilometers through the park. In some places, it is more than 600 meters deep. At its most narrow point, it is just 6 meters across. Zion is one of the 10 most visited parks in the country. Travelers from America and around the world come here to explore its canyons, climb its steep walls, and walk its dramatic trails.
Zion's extraordinary beauty affected early Mormon settlers. Members of the religious group came to the area beginning in the 1850s. They thought it looked like heaven. They named the land after a place from the Bible, Zion. Zion means sanctuary or refuge in ancient Hebrew. Mormons were not, of course, the first people to explore the area. Experts say humans first arrived around 12,000 years ago. They hunted very large animals, like mammoths, giant sloths, and camels. Climate change and overhunting caused these animals to die out about 8,000 years ago. Humans changed their methods. They hunted smaller animals and gathered other food. Some 2,000 years ago, a culture centered on what we now call Zion began to form. Scientists know these people as the Virgin Anasazi. They settled in the area and grew crops. They used the water from the Virgin River and depended on the rich diversity of native plants and animals. Over time, many Native American groups called the area home, including the Southern Paiute. The Southern Paiutes called the area Makuntuweap. In their language, the name meant Straight Canyon. The United States Congress moved to protect the area beginning in the early 1900s. In 1909, it became a national monument. It was called Makuntuweap National Monument. President William Taft established the national monument. He described the land as a labyrinth of remarkable canyons with highly ornate and beautifully colored walls, in which are plainly recorded the geological events of past ages. In 1918, the National Monument became a national park. And in 1919, Congress changed its name to Zion, the name used by the Mormons.
Today, almost 3 million people visit Zion National Park each year. Driving is restricted in much of the park during busy months. Instead, visitors travel in small buses that take them to areas where they can walk on paths into the wild areas. Walking is the best way to explore Zion. The park offers visitors many different kinds of paths. Some are short and easy. One easy walk is almost 2 kilometers. It takes hikers to a clear pool of water and waterfalls. Other hikes take most people all day to complete. Some are not advisable for people who are afraid of high places. A hike called Angel's Landing is considered one of the most exciting hikes in America. The trail leads to the top of a rock formation that stands more than 450 meters above the canyon floor. Toward the top of the rock, the walking path becomes extremely narrow. On both sides are very steep cliffs. Hikers can hold on to a rope for increased safety. Most hikers say the views from Angel's Landing make the difficult and dangerous experience worth it. Some visitors favor the lower parts of Zion National Park. One popular area is known as the Narrows. The Narrows is the narrowest part of Zion Canyon. The area has extremely tall canyon walls and unusual hanging gardens. These green areas of wildflowers, ferns, and mosses grow out of the sandstone walls. If you want to explore the Narrows, you must be ready to get wet. Hiking in the Narrows means walking next to, and even in, the Virgin River. If water levels are high, walking in the river can be extremely difficult. Sometimes, hikers may be waist high in water.
Even near the canyon floor, hikes at Zion can be dangerous. The great amount of rock in the area does not absorb water. As a result, sudden floods, called flash floods, are a serious threat. People can help prepare themselves as much as possible for the dangers of Zion National Park at the Visitor Center. But the risks come with great rewards. I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.